Okay. Hey, very good. Look at this. We're all here. And top of the day, everybody. It's, what is it? It's noon in California. It's 2 o'clock in Austin and 3 o'clock in Massachusetts. And we're here together today to talk about masculinity and maybe some other things too. But you know, I often think about when I'm talking to allies, you know, what is the overlap between our respective worlds? You know, what is it that we have in common? And sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it isn't. In this case, it's kind of kismet because Tori and I were just talking the other day about masculinity. And she was telling me, you know, what qualities she appreciates in a man. I'll let her go into it in more detail, but just roughly speaking, it has to do with having feminine and masculine qualities kind of balancing each other out. And then I talked to you, Fabian, and your microphone is off.
I'm just being mindful of background noise.
Okay. And then I talked to you, Fabian, and I noticed, you know, that you're doing a workshop called Masterful Man. And in talking to you about it, your take on masculinity sounded very similar to what Tori was saying. So I said, well, we all got to get together and talk about this.
Yeah.
So I was looking at your website, and let's see if we can find that.
I got it pulled up on my phone for reference.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't have to do that because I've got some screenshots. And,
great.
Let me see. I think I have it. Let me try to find that. Yeah, this page in particular, you were giving some statistics which were alarming, depressing even. 1 in 3 men are chronically lonely. 75% of suicides are men. 1 in 8 men are diagnosed with a mental illness like anxiety, depression, panic attacks. Men are 3 times more likely than women to become alcoholics. 87% of adults suffering from bad sleep are men. Men are 3 times as likely to report frequent drug use than women. 73% of adults who go missing are men. Men are less likely to seek out or accept support than women. No wonder people are having so many sex change operations. It's a curse to be a man. What's up with this, baby? Why do you... Where did these statistics come from, by the way? You didn't just make them up, did you?
No, I mean, the person who made the website, Nathaniel Solis, who is the lead in Masterful Man, he called it together. These are statistics that I don't know if he cited them there on that page. They might be cited somewhere else on the webpage. I think it looks like he just screenshotted that. These are common statistics. I think probably SAMHSA. Oh, God, what does SAMHSA stand for again? It's like the government agency responsible for mental health, tracking this stuff. I'm a veteran, so I know VA statistics. I follow the VA newsletter, and they're always putting out statistics like this. So this particular set, I don't really remember precisely, but very easy to verify. And it might be on the webpage even somewhere else.
All right, we'll take your word for it that they're real. What's the reason for it? Why are things so terrible for men?
I mean, there is going to be a little more speculation, but I think, you know, I really look forward to hearing what Tori has to say in a way, maybe let her speak up before I get too far into it to hear what a woman has to say. But I will, I think it's harder for men to really be like, what do I do in this? What is my place even in this world? So women can work, they do work, they can artificially inseminate themselves, they can raise their own kids, they don't really need men, except that there are things they need them for. I'll let Tori maybe go before I elaborate on that. But it's just, where do we find our place? I mean, I think there's no frontier anymore. Typical manly things like construction, the trades have been devalued. Like we want to talk about these suicide rates and these alcoholism rates are extremely high amongst construction workers, and it's sad because they're and literally building our world and maintaining our world. And there's just not enough respect going there. And then the rest of us who don't want to be, frankly, I don't want to be a construction worker. Doesn't mean I don't honor it, but where do I find my place? Like, after I left the Navy, it's kind of been a constant theme in my own life. Like, well, what the hell do I do? Where are these other teams of men that I can plug into? So I could go on and on, but again, the general thing is like, what do we even need a man for right now? Like, that simple question. And the answers are coming again. And I think we're on the tip of a revolution in that, an evolution in that, that it's, thank God that's here. But yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
What do you think, Tori?
Yeah, no, I just, I agree with everything you've said. I'm curious, like, some of the people that you've maybe been influenced by, because like some of the things you're saying, it reminds me of what Camille Paglia has said.
I am familiar. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Just talking about her this morning with, so I'm here in Austin staying with an old friend back to kindergarten. He was like, oh, you broke up with your wife. Come stay with me. He just brought Camille Paglia up to me this morning. So go for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let me see. I think I read her book recently, Free Men and Free Women. I don't know if you ever read it.
No. But, just ordered it.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's just one quote in it that I feel like, I mean, there's actually a lot of quotes. I hadn't had the time to really go through it all, but she says that if there is ever a serious destabilization of the world's economies, perhaps through some sudden climate change that affects food production and leads to a breakdown of law and order, history shows that everything will regress. We will have to rely on men once more to protect us and to put things back together again. And I feel like what you said too about, you know, where is men's place? And like, because I've had this conversation with my friends, like my girlfriends and like my sister before, because it is interesting, because it's like, if a woman, like, because women have been given freedom and we're able to kind of, you know, get jobs and we don't have to depend on men anymore. It's like, it's almost like, and I don't mean to say this in any kind of negative way, but it's like, if a woman can make a man and be a man, then what is a man? So it's like a man has to go beyond woman. It, like, they have to. And I did have a clip here from Neil, actually, and she kind of talks about how, you know, when, you know, with feminism, modern feminism, it's like women think, like, for men to follow women and what they think a man should be, what ends up happening is that women don't even like those men.
Yeah.
So let me just bring that up real quick.
Men have absolutely been demonized in a way that makes no sense, because when you go to the elite campuses in the United States, you see boys who've been so processed, who are desperate to please women. And the more men try to please women, the more men follow the agenda that women have set for themselves, the less women want them, okay? So women everywhere are unhappy. They're so unhappy. They're unhappy. Why? Okay, because there are no men anywhere near. The men have been incinerated, okay, in the area around them. Okay.
So that I feel like, I don't know, I think feminism, modern feminism has done a lot of damage, not only to men, but into boys. But I think just naturally because of that, if you don't have men, women are going to suffer. Children are going to suffer. They're so, like, we need men, and we need men to be masculine. And we need to respect their needs.
You're saying we need men to be masculine, but you're also saying, you know, that you appreciate that men who have feminine qualities too.
Yes. Yeah. There's so much to it, I feel like. But I talked to Jeff before about how, like, you know, I've just been trying to figure out, like, why I like certain people over others. And, like, for example, like Jordan Peterson, I like Jeff, and then there's like other guys I know, and they all have they're masculine, but they also have this feminine integration with them. There's emotion, there's, and when you have that kind of masculine and feminine integration, you end up becoming almost like a more sovereign person, because it's like the feminine is like a grounding, and then the masculine is kind of like where you can kind of project outward, because, you know, masculinity is more project, like projectile, like you're aiming and you're, Camille talks about it.
He talks about it
in your physiology, like where, you know, even when men urinate, like you have to aim, or else you, like, this is like a quote from her, you'll like, you'll urinate all over yourself in like an infantile manner. And so you have to learn to project, you have to aim. And that feminine grounding though really helps in kind of helping a man go even further than he could. So,
yes.
Right. Yeah, so I'm curious.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I think we need to do a quick audio adjustment because we're picking up the coffee shop background. Maybe if you go back to the audio setting and reverse what we talked about before, I put it back to how it was, that might make it better. If we'll give Fabian a chance to do that. Fabian is a victim of the backlog in shipping. He doesn't have the router that he needs at his home base, so he had to go to a coffee shop for us to get a good connection. So that's what's going on.
Yeah. I'll just mute when I'm not talking.
Okay, that's another way to handle it.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about the military or the type of person, although, you know, I'm sure that there's a considerable amount of diversity in the population among military personnel, but maybe you can generalize to some extent. You're a guy who focuses a lot on masculinity. You come from like a subculture, let's call the military a subculture, where people are together in very intimate situations. That's, you know, unique compared to the rest of the population. And I'm wondering, I guess, in particular about homosexuality, both in terms of people who are gay and also as it relates to people who are straight, who may be homophobic, at least mildly, if not severely. What is your take on masculinity as it relates to people in the military and homosexuality and homophobia?
Well, there's a lot of things on the table here, including everything Tori just said.
Yeah.
So I'd like to keep what she said in mind as I answer. You know, what I was about the feminine grounding the masculine, I would say, first of all, it goes both ways.
Yes,
and really, the word that is, you're going to see out there now, you're just going to see it, is polarity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what's the big buzzword that's coming now as the pendulum swings back the other way from where we were in, I would say, postmodernism. And I just want to say, like Toria said, we were damaging men to some degree. It has been, but it was also kind of, to me, just an organic growth of consciousness and almost necessary. Like, we needed feminism. Like, our whole world needed to be like, hey, women are humans too. Like, that needed to happen, actually.
Yeah.
And yes, like, masculinity has kind of been on the back burner and maybe too long. So now people are like, oh, polarity. Wait, most of us that with penises are men with masculine energy, and most of us with vaginas are women with feminine energy. Maybe we should get back to looking at that. So the military, you know, I graduated from Annapolis in 03, so it was still the don't ask, don't tell era.
Mm-hmm.
And on my ship, I knew who the gay people were pretty much because they trusted me. Like, some of them explicitly trusted me, and the other ones, you're like, yeah, that person's gay, or like half the women are gay. Like, it's not really like a thing. And on my ship anyway, it just wasn't a thing. And I think the Navy, you know, it's so hard to talk about the military because it's not a monolith. Like, each branch is different, each unit within each branch. So each ship has, like, you have a good ship or a bad ship. My ship was super active. We got worked hard, and we had one of the IT guys on the ship hacked into one of the gay guys' emails and exposed it and was like, see, this guy's gay. So we had to kick him out, but we also kicked out the IT guy because he violated his privacy. So I was like kind of proud of how we handled that. And I think people were bummed to see the gay guy go. And the other guy was like, we would have rather just let him go. So my point is, even in Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I think people were kind of like, knew it was a stupid policy. I did anyway.
Well, things are different now, so we don't have to get into too much detail, but I'm curious what was revealed. Yeah, what, just the fact that he was gay, or that he was somehow showboating, or whatever the word might be.
Just that he was much. Gay.
What?
It was just that he was gay. It was some sailor who was a
just
asshole,
simply being
frankly,
gay. Yeah.
Wow. And was like, wanted to just be an asshole to this guy. Ask me your question precisely again, Jeff, if you would.
Well, I'll ask in a slightly different way. As a guy who specializes in masculinity, do you look at how that relates to gay males in any different way than how it relates to straight males?
No, I don't. A lot of that is informed by my experience with Gore Vidal, which you know about. And
which the audience doesn't, so we should say that Fabian, probably, you want to say it?
Yeah. This man, Gore Vidal, who I admit a lot of people may not know, was incredibly famous between especially the 50s into the 2000s, early 2000s, as an author, but also as a man, a political commentator, perhaps even more famous for that, and also as just a man who commented on sexuality. And he would have said, essentially, I think most people would have looked at him as gay or bisexual. He did not. He was not interested in labels, though. The point was, he was a masculine man who had this whatever pansexual. He wouldn't have labeled it. Just sometimes I want to hook up with women, and sometimes I want to hook up with men, and sometimes I want to hook up with both at the same time. So
yeah.
So and he wrote books that addressed transgenderism decades ago. He was very much ahead of his curve. Ahead of the curve on a lot of this. I was that man's personal assistant for 2 years.
Yeah.
And because I got it. I was like, this is a masculine. This is a man with masculine energy, but he is queer as hell in bed. So I get it. I seen that both can exist. And it's that simple to me. It's if you want to work with masculine energy, I guess if you're gay, you're a top. Is one of the things that implies that, although not obviously, plenty of exceptions, much more fluid. So in my work, it is generally straight, just is what I just naturally occur, because it's what I am, straight men, straight up sexual straight men who are just like, I don't know what, like, I'm trying too much.
So porn, you're not, I get
what you're with women.
I get what your attitude is, and so you're not concerned about the perception of the public. You know, you're dealing with the public as everything. So you've got people who have hang-ups. They're going to be homophobic.
Concerned?
No, I'm saying, I think you just told me your personal take on it, but now I'm asking you about your perception of the public. I mean, what I'm getting at is there are homophobic people, and it's a bunch of men hanging out. This is not an issue at all. I mean, I'm really fascinated, actually, by.
I don't understand what the issue is that you're. I don't even understand quite what you're saying. The issue is
that people who are homophobic may be a little bit leery about signing up for a men's group.
Oh God, no!
No,
no.
That doesn't happen at all. Okay.
No. I would say quite the opposite. In my men's group, myself and my partner, my coaches, are all sort of nerdy, but all handsome. We all have great relationships or have no problem with women. The straight men want what we got. That's pretty clear to me.
Okay.
I don't think people are scared we're some gay cult or something. That's what I tell men. I'm like, hey, I like having sex with women too. And it's really, I do it the right way. And trust me, you want to do it the right way. And the right way is going to involve some inner work and some humility and looking at yourself and swallowing your goddamn pride and being ready to be humble. And it's worth it. And I'm living proof of that. And my fellow coaches are living proof of that. And more men doing this inner work are more proof of that. So if you think this is gay, the joke's on you, buddy.
Well,
that's true.
Don't accuse me of anything. I'm just curious.
Let's keep the devil's advocate.
Well,
I wasn't pointing at you, Jeff. I meant anyone who would think.
Yeah. Right.
It's like laughable to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, in a way, that's refreshing. But I just can't help noticing how peculiar and how inconsistent the public is. Like, for example, when Ellen came out, or, you know, when there was the first kiss on some TV show between people of the same gender.
Oh, sure.
That was a big deal. Yet at other times, like when rock stars are androgynous, or they kind of are known as to be gay or bisexual, for some reason, the public just accepts it then. I'm not saying they shouldn't accept it. I'm just asking why in one case they do and others they don't. Like take a look at this. This is Mick Jagger and Ron Wood. Again, that's no big deal to me, but you know, you've got him playing kissy face with him, and here's another one where he's very good at it. I'm sorry. He does a crotch grab.
Also, who knows what drugs they're on at that moment anyway.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, well, who knows what drugs they're on? But I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the way it's like not an issue at all to the public.
Yes. Okay.
Yet at other times it is. So that's what really.
I know it is kind of interesting.
Yeah, here's one more. This is I have one of Springsteen, who's certainly doesn't have any reputation at all for being androgynous or anything like that. But here he is practically making out with Clarence Clemons. And I don't recall anybody ever even acknowledging that, like, you know, in the press or anybody reacting to that.
I can only give my impression is that they're artists.
Mm-hmm.
So, and great artists, so an implied extra emotional intelligence to me. And they are putting on a show, so there is something sensational about that. Also a black man. And
yeah.
And I think people, when they watch music live, get enraptured, right? Yeah, like that's the whole point. It's like, oh, we're in this rapture. It is love, and it's amazing. And I think we like, oh, it's just so pure that a man would kiss another man. It should be that pure, perhaps anyway. But not that I was going to kiss my shipmates all the time.
Yeah, right.
But it's like so pure in that moment. It's because it's so ecstatic, and
yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe that can be a window for us to be like, oh, yeah, it's fine, it's okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think they also just like to push the limit sometimes. Like those rock stars, like they're very secure in themselves, and they don't mind, you know, crossing the lines of what's socially acceptable, and it's okay because they're so like secure in it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's them. But again, I'm asking about the public perception. I think I've been curious and thinking about it. And I think what Fabian said might be the answer. It's something special, something magical about music. Music touches us in such a special, deep way that it just kind of overwhelms any other thoughts or feelings we might otherwise have. So
I think
if somebody.
Something to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, I used to be a stand-up comedian, and you know, and I've worked in TV, so the show business is another subculture where things are a little bit different. And guys, you know, like I often will call guys sweetheart, honey, darling, you know, something like that, just to be affectionate, nothing at all sexual about it. And I kind of got in the habit of doing that, and I've noticed that sometimes I don't even think about it, I just say it. And sometimes when I say it to certain guys, they don't like it at all. And some guys have told me so, you know?
So I'm thinking, maybe I should have had you cue this up. Might be worth putting on screen. The cover of the book, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of this book?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's published in 90. Kind of a classic of men's work at this point, based on Jungian psychology. And in the foreword, the authors say, you know, hey, you know, we don't need less masculinity. We need more, but we need more of the mature type. And in fact, our society doesn't even know what mature masculine energy looks like. Like, how many people really know what that is or could point it out when they see it? Even myself, I've been having to learn it for myself and point it out for myself in throughout my 30s, a lot of that. And so that their thing about men's work is quite simply just getting society used to recognizing what mature masculine energy is, but loving, getting people used to loving with masculine energy and being loved by masculine energy. Like, we just don't know what it is. Yes, and that's in the foreword to this book, which is a classic and a pretty safe place to start if you're really curious about men's work,
right,
is with Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette there. Yeah.
Well,
just people aren't used to it.
Yeah.
How many people could really recognize when they're being loved by mature masculine energy? And then I love people with mature masculine energy, and then sometimes they don't even receive it because I think maybe they don't even realize that that's what's happening.
You have to be receptive to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's see which of these words are tolerable. Do you like to be called Schnuggums, Fabian?
I mean, everything's context, right? Everything's context.
True. True.
So it's in the right context, I would probably welcome any of these.
That is so true. It is the context.
Snickerdoodle is a good one, I think. All right, enough of that. So the word warrior popped up, which is a kind of a, I don't know what the word is. I was going to say double-edged sword, but people have different reactions to it is what I'm getting at.
Sure.
And talking about the overlap between our worlds, we're doing a campaign in partnership with public libraries. Many of the public libraries in California have veterans resource centers. And we meaning U.S. Tour of Duty, is offering an intro to podcasting workshop. And librarians are scholars of sorts. You know, the people go to college, they get degrees to be a librarian. They're serious people with formidable skills. And I was thinking, well, geez, where is the overlap between our world and theirs? And then, you know, I came across some literature about warrior scholars, which is actually pretty well established. It's like, you know, nothing that I thought of on my own, although I did sort of coincidentally think of it independently. But it turns out that's quite a thing. And we were talking the other day about Thucydides, who's a Greek warrior and philosopher, and how we both love this quote: "Society that separates its scholars from its warriors will have its thinking done by cowards and its fighting by fools." And you really reacted to that quite strongly when we were chatting the other day, Fabian. I noticed you posted a version of it on your Facebook page too. What does that quote mean to you?
Well, I agree with it, I suppose, first of all. I went to the Naval Academy, which is an institution to cultivate scholars and warriors. I think all our service academies, I have a lot. I mean, this is a whole other topic I could talk for hours on with perhaps people more interested in the service academies. In some ways succeed, in some ways come up short in both the scholar and warrior part, I think. But who represents the scholar part? It's academia is what comes to mind. And for sure, I look at academia with a certain amount of disdain at this point for being too institutionalized, too decadent, and caving in too much to the radical left, for sure, which I spent many years on, and I have plenty of friends over there. But caving in too much to it really makes, like, what is the institution even there for in the first place? So lots of questions around that. And when you're only being scholarly and you don't have a warrior spirit, you're just not connected to the reality of fighting with people or leading people in fighting. So it's real easy to sit up in the ivory tower and go, oh, we should go fight that or fight this or fight that. But you go do the fighting.
Right.
So, and then the people, the soldiers who end up in the battle who don't know any better, are fools for for following these scholars that have no courage.
Yeah, it's been said that generals are sometimes anti-war in a sense because they really understand what, you know, what the costs are.
Yeah. But
So there's another great book I love that is very niche and not well known because it only got translated into English like 18 years ago called The Tao of the Military. And that to me is sort of the successor to the Sun Tzu's Art of War. Sun Tzu's Art of War was very rational, science, like clever. This is how you just outsmart your enemy and win. And it became this kind of like business man's leadership guide in the 80s. The Tao Military, I love for a lot of reasons, but one thing that really occurred to me is how people love martial arts, right? If you practice martial arts, your body's in shape, your mind's, it's a whole mind, body, spirit system. And the idea is that by being so good at self-defense, you'll never actually have to like use that skill. Or you're so good at self-defense and you're so embodied and so present through the spiritual side of it, no one's gonna fuck with you anyway. And that our military is just really a macro of that on the society level. Like our military at its best can be the reflection of that spirit for the entire community. So the US military at its best could embody that and does in many ways, actually. Like we're just, our masculine energy is so good at working together with weapons of war that no one, it would be stupid to mess with us. And so I was a Navy officer and then I really went the far left, like, oh man, we should disband the military. And I've definitely come back to the middle or maybe even the right on this issue. Like, no, it's really healthy thing that we have a place to send people to train together with masculine energy and know how to use it together. Yeah. And so the military has become this de facto initiation place for masculine energy. And I think that's a mistake. I think that's really what we need to address. Like, we can't have the only place we indoctrinate and initiate masculine energy be the military. Like, we need...
Right. Well, that's kind of the whole guiding premise behind U.S. Tour of Duty is to take the best of that
Beautiful.
And apply it to the civilian sector.
Yes.
So let's talk a little bit about your upcoming cross-country trip, because you're really putting the U.S. Tour of Duty into U.S. Tour of Duty. And we can look, I think, at libraries as sort of the civilian equivalent of military posts, because there are command centers of organizing, so to speak. What is it? You're going to be doing a cross-country trip, and you've agreed to stop at libraries and try to recruit some to get on board and partner with us. What was motivating you, even before we started talking about teaming up on this, what was motivating you to do this cross-country tour?
Well, you're right. I mean, I couldn't have... If I wish I had come up with U.S. Tour of Duty for myself. Like, that's what I should have named this for myself. And it's just so perfect. I'm like, for how I'm feeling, actually. I am a guy that has always, I spent too much time in SoCal, 13 years, although I moved within it. I'm nomadic. First of all, the traveling spirit is within me anyway. Like, the Navy really suited me. Like, living on this, like, mobile fortress that just travels around the world was pretty fun in a way. Besides the work, which wasn't always fun. But so the energy suits me, the traveling energy, the movement energy just suits me as a person. I feel better, I think clearer being on the move. So I take long walks every day. And I've always wanted to do a road trip. Really what's allowed me the space for it is that I broke up with my wife last year. So as soon as we really, which was a whole thing to talk about in and of itself, and we are friends, and I'm good now, and it's okay. But that divorce really was a crucifixion, a dark night of the soul, a place for me to really look at myself and go, all right, what the hell am I up to? Like, what is going on here? I didn't want to get divorced. So where was my intentions been? What happened? Just what happened? And a lot of things around masculine energy came up for me. And the fact that my wife and I just we went 6 years, we really grew together, and now we want different experiences. So I have space to do this road trip. And so it's, to me, this fun thing and also a way to give. So as an Annapolis graduate of 03, back then it was claimed that that education cost $250,000 to turn to me, a high school graduate, and turn me into a junior officer, right? Through the academy. ROTC does it for less. So there's a debate to be made that we should just do that. But then all the additional training, all my VA benefits that I get, which I get quite a bit. So I've received a lot from the American taxpayer, and I've also given a lot and want to give more. Like if World War III breaks out.
In what way do you you see yourself giving?
Right. On this road trip, doing a lot of just advertising that here's an itinerary. I'm coming into these cities, these towns, and even just open to having people meet with me virtually, and providing a lot of pro bono and by donation work around having conversations with men about masculinity, men who just want to talk about their addictions. To me, the big ones being porn and weed that are now like getting porn under control is thankfully, porn addictions under control is thankfully something out there. And I've taught journaling as a tool, the tool of journaling itself for 6 years. And now I'm keen on having clients who are into writing their own memoirs, as I've done, and having the memoir writing itself, this links up with libraries perfectly, having the memoir writing itself be a tool of therapy and introspection and personal development. Right. And it's not just for men either, although that'll be like as I go about and find places to speak. Obviously, veterans halls are a place I can plug into pretty easily, libraries, as you're mentioning. So still getting clients out of this, doing my work remotely, traveling around, documenting it, telling a story of America and writing and documenting in my own way, but really traveling around being like, hey, here's my schedule. Here's a link. You can schedule an hour with me and just going around the country doing that.
Well, that's great. And I'm sure that a lot of libraries will be up for helping us organize this sort of thing. And our workshops are free of charge. But you have a for-profit business, and before we close, I would like to give you an opportunity to say a few words about it. Let's take another look at your website. It's masterfulman.com, and we showed before some of these harrowing statistics, I don't know how easy it is for people to read this, but is there anything that you want to say that can, you know, you can say succinctly about some of the stuff that we're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. There's basically two, or I'll say three main phases of our 8-week course. And these are all parts of it. But the flow of our course is dopamine detox and circadian rhythm management. So getting guys' bodies energy in check. Like, not like, if you're on porn, we're going to start this course by getting off porn, and you're going to have a group of men to help you do that. Weed, alcohol, whatever, including screen time, workaholism, video game addictions, anything that men are getting a dopamine fix from, we're going to dopamine detox and replace it with something else. Mostly scholarly stuff. Like, hey, we're all going to dopamine detox and like study philosophy together.
And well, just quickly, for those who aren't familiar with that word dopamine, can you explain?
Okay. Yeah, what it is? Because
that's sort of
applies and asking. Because
because that kind of applies to all types of addiction.
Yes. So dopamine detox, like polarity and men's work in general, you're going to see it out there now. It's coming out. It's a new wellness thing, perhaps. And I don't mean that cynically at all. It's important. Dopamine just being one of the happy feel-good chemicals that our brain secretes. So if you're just the easiest way for a man or woman too, although it's not as really an issue for a woman as it is for a man, to get a hit of dopamine is masturbate. Smoke weed, watch porn, masturbate, dopamine hit, easy. But now you are addicted.
Isn't that even like why Facebook has the like thing? You know, people get a dopamine.
Yes. Absolutely. Like so all these people trying to catch your attention on the internet are trying to get you fixed on them with dopamine. So unplug from the matrix, return to nature are implying that here on this slide. The second part is now that the body's energy is clearing up, detoxing and getting over addiction brings up emotions and shadow, which you see here. So now stuff we've been suppressing with the addictions is coming to the surface. And in our course, you have a group of men, some of them coaches trained in this to help you look at those emotions and get under them and see like where they came from and understand what the shadow is too. Real quick, concept really popularized by Jung or discovered by Jung, that there are authentic elements of who we are as people that we learn to disassociate and put in our shadow as children because they didn't get us love. I mean, I'm going real bit boilerplate here. Simple things like girls are better seen and not hurt, or boys don't cry. So the boy learns not to cry, yet maybe he's actually a very emotionally intelligent person and authentically needs to cry and let that piece of them out and reintegrate their emotional intelligence back into their being. Something I'm speaking from a little personal experience on that one, by the way. So now you've cleared up your energy, dopamine detox, sleep cycles fixed up, you're working out again, you're eating healthier, space is open, and now emotions that are buried come up. We can process those emotions and now take another look at our life and start creating a new identity and new visions for ourselves, which is like becoming the architect, embodying the vision. So that's the flow of our course. Get our body energy right, notice the emotional energy, get disturbed, handle the emotional energy, and now be like, okay, I am seeing myself, the essence of who I am more clearly now. I can architect a new vision for myself that's including masculine energy in our case and healthy masculine energy, and go forth and make the world a better place and be a fucking man and God damn it, be a leader for ourselves and get what we want. And as Tori was saying, women are missing this. Like, women are like, oh, fuck. So I'm getting amped up talking about it because in my 30s, when I went through my wooey healing spiritual phase, a lot of feminine energy in that. Me seeking out a lot of attention from older women even. And they nurtured me, and I got a lot of, even my ex-wife really helping me out. But now I'm at the point where I'm like, wait, okay, I'm good. I don't need fucking any more feminine nurturing. I'm ready to go kick ass again.
Right. I love it.
Yeah. Men are looking for that. That is what men are looking for.
Yes. Yeah.
You are.
And ultimately, that is what women want.
Yes. And I'm getting plenty of attention from women, not to toot my own horn or anything, but it works. It is real. And it works, and I want everyone to have this. There's plenty of love to go around, but the right way, and the right way might involve, if you're a dude, getting your porn addiction under the wraps, which I know won't be fun. Been there, done that. I get it. It sucks, but worth it. Worth it.
Yeah, you got to stop doing the things that are holding you back first.
Yeah. You are.
I feel
a
that
man,
too.
A man with a mission. And
that
I love it.
Is a big point about masculinity. I have refound a mission. I've been looking for one since I got out of the Navy. It started coalescing again when I started life coaching 6 years ago around journaling specifically. And I won't lie, in my 30s, I lost sight of a mission. I did. And I was comfortable and I got my health in order and my mental health started getting in order. But then the lack of mission really started revealing itself again. And that hurt the most, to be honest. That actually hurt the most.
Well, I'm so glad that you think that U.S. Tour of Duty is the perfect fit for who you are and what you plan to do. Because I feel exactly the same way.
Yeah.
When
it is a U.S. Tour of Duty. It
Pardon
really
me?
Is. It really is a U.S. tour of duty for me. I mean, I was even stationed overseas, spending most of my time practicing blowing up North Korea, China, and defending Japan. Well, now I'm home, and I'm ready to drive around my home and do a U.S. tour of duty. I mean, I really,
it is, so what's, it really feels like. I guess you haven't cemented the date completely yet, but what's roughly speaking the time period you have in mind?
Heading out of Austin, heading west, early May. So
okay.
I have people I know I want to see in New Mexico and Arizona, get to San Diego, I don't know, late May, early June. Obviously, this will be incredibly flexible. If, as things come up on, as opportunities come up on the trip, I intend to take them. So who knows where that'll take me. And I'll just start from San Diego, maybe early June. I'll just start working my way up to the Northwest.
And are there parts of the country, and other than the ones you mentioned, are you kind of planning to hit the whole country or just certain parts, or you're going to take it as it comes and figure it out?
A lot of taking it as it comes, but I definitely want to hit up the whole country. And if it takes me 2 years, it takes me 2 years. If it takes me 3 years, I'm really seeing this as a lifestyle for myself. I'll buy a home possibly this year. I'll buy a home base this year and start making forays out of that home base. And
you're going to drive in a van? Is that right?
I have a pickup truck right now. And, you know, as I make money doing this, I'll upgrade possibly to a van or a Sprinter or something. Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you envision sleeping in the vehicle, or you're going to stay in hotels? Or
I envision plenty of sleeping in my car or truck. I envision a lot of staying at friends' houses. I have friends all over the country and who want to have me. What can I say? So I'm going to pick them up.
Well, you deserve to be comfortable. I hope you get some comfortable accommodations.
Well, there's something masculine about not getting too comfortable and balancing, you know, it wouldn't
look at Tori looking at you. She's looking at you with the look of love as you say that.
No, I've been loved. Yeah, this is everything for me.
I like sleeping in my truck. It is comfortable. I've built it out nicely, so it's not horrible. It's really just bathroom that's the issue. And being on the road and sleeping in parks and sleeping on roadsides and sleeping in truck stops and just being more grounded and connected. It's fun, all right. Frankly. Yeah.
Meeting all those meeting people. I mean, that's huge. Yeah. All that engagement.
And if I get
that's how you're going to get traction.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
And even though we like roughing it and we understand things aren't ideal, try to get a good internet connection wherever you go. That's very important.
Well, when I have my own house, I'm in charge. There will be.
No. It was fine today. I mean, when you're on the road.
Oh, yes. Well, that's why I got this brand new phone with a hotspot. So it should be good to go. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I imagine we'll be in touch a fair amount between now and May to help plan.
Can I plug one more thing?
Yeah.
Can you put my name back on screen?
Oh, yeah.
If you just go to Fabian Bouthillette, obviously one word, .com, I have my own private coaching practice too. So if you want to get a hold of me, you go to FabianBouthillette.com. That's it. That's all I wanted to say.
Now that you mention it, what's it like going through life with a surname that I imagine requires to be spelled every single time you say it to somebody? Has that been a drag or you don't know?
No, but the one time it was a drag was Cleve Summer at Annapolis. So we get all our gear, right? Yeah. And we have to put our name on every single piece of gear, every sock, every underwear, every book. So they gave us these, like, they gave us this, like, stamp thing to do it with. And my roommate's name, Korean guy, was Yu, Y-U. And my name is 12 letters. So it took me literally six times as long. That was the one time I was pissed.
Well, I'm proud of myself.
Why you? And I'm like B-O-U-T.
A whole alphabet.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm proud of myself for spelling it correctly and remembering it. And,
man.
I bet that hasn't always been the case with other folks with whom you've dealt.
It's easy. It's Bouthillette. It actually sounds.
If you think about it, I guess it's not that difficult. Yeah.
It's just a lot, for sure.
It's just not common. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us, and let's do it again before too long, okay?
I really appreciate it, Jeff. And I think it's pretty amazing that you were like, U.S. tour of duty and your intention behind doing something called that. And Tori, I know Jeff caught your eye in some way, and thank you for helping out and sharing your perspective is very important.
Tori is the MVP. Things have really escalated since she came.
I'm glad. And we need each other. Yeah. Well, I'm
we
sure
need
we
each
have
other.
There you go. We can make all sorts of more polarity comments on that perhaps, yeah. But thank you. And,
all right.
It's been a galvanizing force for me to think of this as a U.S. tour of duty. It has. I appreciate
that. Oh, good. I'm so pleased to hear that.
Yeah. It's those big aims that really are.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. See you soon.
Thank you so much.